Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Juneau Assembly will vote tonight on whether to approve $2.3 million worth of city funding to support five proposed affordable housing projects. The money comes from the city's Affordable Housing Fund. The city created the fund 5 years ago to address its housing shortage, specifically low and middle income housing. Since then, the city has awarded nearly $13 million in grants or loans from the fund. This round, $2.5 million is available. The city uses criteria like proximity to public transportation and long-term affordability to determine which projects get funding and how much. The projects proposed this year would help create more than 40 units of housing, comprising both single-family homes and apartment complexes all across the borough. The Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority is up for two grants. One is for $800,000 to help fund the construction of 16 single-family homes in the Peterson Hill subdivision. The other grant is for $250,000 to help pay for building five single-family homes on North Douglas. Another applicant, Brave Enterprises LLC, is up for a $900,000 loan to help fund the renovation of the shuttered Bergman Hotel in downtown Juneau. The project would turn the historic 46-room hotel into an 18-unit apartment complex. Southeast Endeavors, LLC, is asking for a $200,000 loan to construct a fourplex on Lee Street in Auk Bay. And the Society of St. Vincent de Paul requested a $150,000 grant to help pay for long-term maintenance of their Teal Street facilities. Juneau residents have the chance to testify on ordinances on tonight's agenda, as well as non-agenda items, in person or online. People who want to testify online must notify the clerk by 4 p.m. before the meeting. The meeting begins at 6 p.m. tonight at City Hall. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Support for grant-funded positions and teacher contracts became the main issue during the Juneau School Board's budget public forum last week. Most of the nearly 30 parents, elders, teachers, students, and community members at the forum testified in support of funding positions in the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy program, as well as reaching a new union contract for teachers. Jody Gaddy is the parent of a kindergartner at TCLL and says the program has allowed her son to bring the Tlingit language home with him.
I never imagined I would witness a child, let alone my own child, teaching my mother the language that was once denied to her. That moment is deeply emotional for our family and shows how powerful this work truly is.
Three positions at TCLL are funded through a federal grant, and that funding will end in September. The school district's preliminary budget doesn't include these three positions, but the school board last month directed administrators to include one of the three grant-funded positions in its budget. That leaves the program's principal and biliteracy specialist positions without funding. Jamie Shanley is the director of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Language and Education Departments. She oversees the grants for the district's positions and testified in support of the district's funding the positions, while the nonprofit works on securing long-term funding. She says the district's Tlingit Language and Culture program is growing.
They are teaching their language, they're writing curriculum, they're creating resources, they're writing the Tlingit Language Proficiency Assessment. That's a standardized assessment tool that they will use in their classrooms. And they're doing it all really at little cost to the school district.
Shanley says the program has doubled in size since the grant began in 2023, with 121 students currently enrolled. In addition to grappling with grant-funded positions, the school board is working through contract negotiations with the district's teaching and support staff unions. Both unions have not yet reached a new contract. Deborah Rakis has taught for the district for more than 25 years. She testified before the board last year and testified again last week about contract negotiations. She says what teachers are asking for is not beyond contracts other districts have with teachers.
Look at the salary schedules in the state. Please look at Ketchikan, look at Fairbanks, look at Anchorage.
Right.
I urge you to do that because we're not out of our tree in what we're asking. We're not.
The board will also consider an over $5.3 million deficit in next year's budget. That can either be filled through dipping into district savings or by cuts to services. The district plans to release a budget tool this week that will allow community members to build their own school budget. and provide feedback. There are also several meetings over the next month where the public can testify about the budget. The next opportunity is during tomorrow's school board meeting. The board expects to approve a final budget by March 12th. And Alaska's state government remains in search of a solution to its long-running budget problems. The problem is simple. The state spends more than it takes in. The solution, well, not so simple. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
If you ask Governor Mike Dunleavy, a lot of the state's problems come back to the budget process. Every year, lawmakers gather in Juneau for 4 months and spend much of that time debating how the state should spread around its limited funds. How much for education, how much for public safety, and for the last decade or so, how much the permanent fund dividend should be. Meanwhile, much of the state's revenue depends on the constantly swinging price of oil. Dunleavy says investors who might otherwise bring jobs and new residents to the state have noticed.
This volatile budgetary process has negatively impacted our ability to recruit investment to the state. It has retarded our GDP growth. It has caused deep fractures within this body and within other relationships. And it leads to uncertainty in funding for critical programs.
He said that in his State of the State speech, days before filing a series of bills outlining a fiscal plan that he says would make the budget more stable by boosting revenue and cutting expenses. Most of the money it would raise would come from a sales tax, 4% in the summer, 2% in the winter. The plan would also hike oil taxes and capture more money from outside businesses. It would all be temporary, 5 to 7 years, and at the end, corporate income taxes would vanish entirely. On the expense side, it would put a 1% cap on state spending growth every year. That is not adjusted for inflation, so if inflation runs more than 1%, state spending shrinks. And it would also take the permanent fund dividend out of the state's annual budget debates by putting it and a new formula into the state constitution. Plug that into the state budget and, well...
At no point do any of these things add up to get to a balanced budget.
Neil Steininger crunched the numbers for the Alaska Political Report, an insidery subscription newsletter. It probably helps that he's a former budget director for Dunleavy. Steininger says, for one thing, Dunleavy's plan would fully drain the state's $3 billion rainy day fund by 2033 or 2034, not exactly resolving the state's budget issues. But for another thing, Steininger says the effect of the changes would ultimately make the state's revenue just as volatile, if not more, exactly what Dunleavy is trying to avoid. As a result of Dunleavy's proposed formula for dividends, which would take half of the state's annual draw from the permanent fund and split it 50-50 between state services and dividends. Steininger says the fact that so much reliable, stable investment revenue would be tied to dividends would make the state more dependent on the price of oil.
That's a position we've been in already. You know, that's actually nothing new. It's just really cementing that into the Constitution.
The governor has repeatedly declined interviews on his plans, but his projections are substantially rosier. They show a slight surplus in the early 2030s before returning to large deficits, but the governor's office still projects the plan would draw down half of the rainy day fund over 10 years. Dunleavy says revenue from things like a boom in oil drilling or a new gas pipeline would help the budget balance in the long term, but Steininger says those don't show up in state economists' projections. And so far, the plan has landed in Juneau with a thud. Speaker of the House Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham independent, says he's not optimistic about its chances.
Back of the envelope would suggest that the governor's plan in its totality would actually increase our problem. It would not lessen it.
Even Dunleavy's traditional allies are skeptical. The Republican House Minority Leader called his plan incomplete. But where does that leave state leaders' search for a solution? Edgman and his Senate counterpart say they're intrigued by what they recently heard from a panel of University of Alaska Anchorage economists. They studied a wide variety of options at the request of the governor. Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, says he was interested in the economists' conclusion that raising taxes on corporations and oil and gas would have the smallest impact on the state's economy.
The impact on people, it's much more stressful on folks to have a sales tax or an income tax, easier to accumulate a little higher tax on the industry.
But in the last year of Dunleavy's term, Stephen says it might be too late for this governor to solve the problem. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And Kipnuk was one of the Yukon Kuskokwim villages hit hardest by remnants of the Typhoon Halong in October. This week, residents are starting to vote on whether they want to rebuild their community or relocate to higher ground. As Alaska Desk's Alonia Nijin reports, leaders say it's a swift but necessary step in a complicated process that will define the future of the village.
Raina Paul sits in an Anchorage office scrolling through a spreadsheet filled with hundreds of names of Kipnik tribal members and their phone numbers.
We're just like on A's.
Paul is Kipnik's environmental director, and she's in charge of the village's voting process. Over the next several days, she and her team will call every single adult tribal member, that's about 900 people, and ask them a pressing question. Do they want to rebuild the village in its current location or move to higher ground?
I think it's very important for us to find out what the tribal members from Kipnik want to do so we can continue trying to move forward in applying for funding to do this too, because we're always on a timeline.
Last fall's disastrous winds and flooding destroyed homes and infrastructure and contaminated land and water. Most of Kipnik's residents remain evacuated in Bethel or Anchorage, including Paul. She says she wants the future Kipnik to be safe.
We love our community. We miss our community. We're doing it for our future generations to come, because they might not know what to do when this happens again. I think we're just going to be hit with many, many storm events.
Right now, Kipnik leadership is looking at two sites for relocation. They're both between the village and Chifornik, in the area of a historical settlement called Chiching. Both spots are located on higher ground, one close to the ocean and the second one further inland. The village would have to work with Chifornik Corporation and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to obtain ownership. During the voting process, Paul and her team of four are also asking residents if they want to suggest any other sites for relocation. She says they hope to reach all tribal members within a week.
It's hard, but it's doable.
Paul says she's unsure how long the process will actually take and when the results will be announced. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naiden.
And a quick look at weather today. It is mostly cloudy and 40 degrees here in Juneau. This is KTOO.